Hi, and welcome to NPR's Movie Podcast. The pickings were slim this week in movie coverage. We were probably all focused on things political. In fact, this week, NPR's Tell Me More explored films with politics as the star. And we don't want to gloss over Halloween and a chance to look back at horror movies with an ethnic twist. But first, NPR's Kenneth Turan offers a look at alternate realities.
A number of movies at the multiplex right now are based on fact. Just a couple of examples come to mind. Changeling, Clint Eastwood's dramatization of a child abduction case, and The Express, the life story of football's Ernie Davis. Our film critic Kenneth Turan says when you see based on a true story flash on the screen, keep in mind those initial words, based on.
Reality can certainly be entertaining. Just listen to actor James Brolin, the star of W, doing an impersonation of President George W. Bush that has to be heard to be believed.
Well, looks like we're hitting it off like grease hits a skillet, huh?
Well, I don't think politics should define a human being. There's more to people than just how they vote.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. You're open-minded. Yeah, much more so than me, I'd have to say.
Yes, that's amusing. But I know from personal experience how upset people get when films tinker even slightly with the facts. I heard a journalist who covered the war in Yugoslavia eviscerate Michael Winterbottom's Welcome to Sarajevo because the film used the wrong hotel press headquarters. I recently got a letter from a veteran of the U.S. Army's last all-black combat unit telling me what was inaccurate about Miracle at St. Anna. And I got an email from an alleged Hezbollah sympathizer deriding the inaccuracies in Body of Lies. I have my own theory about how reality and film interact, and it dates from my years as a reporter at the Washington Post at the time all the president's men hit the big screen. I vividly remember sitting in the audience and watching as Carl Bernstein, played by Dustin Hoffman, interviewed former Attorney General John Mitchell on the phone.
Sir, the Committee to Re-elect has issued a statement to our story, but there are just a couple questions.
Did the committee tell you to go ahead and publish the story? You fellas got a great ball game going. As soon as you're done, we're going to do a story on all of you.
Sir, there's just a couple of questions.
I'll call my law office in the morning.
Wow, I thought to myself. How exciting, how romantic to have someone hang up on you. Then I remembered that in the real world of the Washington Post, having someone hang up on you that way is depressing and demeaning. Not exciting at all. Even when movies are trying to be realistic, by their very nature they glamorize everything they touch. So if you're looking for anything like accuracy in movies, you're barking up the wrong tree. It's simply not possible. All you can ask of what's on the screen is that it be persuasive and dramatically consistent as a piece of storytelling. If you get that much, you're getting a heck of a lot.
Here's an accurate description of Kenneth Turan. He reviews movies for Morning Edition and the Los Angeles Times.
Maybe you're just back from voting. Maybe you're tired from standing in line. Maybe you're not quite ready to let go of all the election excitement, or reality is just too much to take. Why not pop in a DVD and watch a political movie? Some are satirical, some are deadly serious, but they all offer some window into the political process. Here to talk about his all-time favorites is Fox Television film critic Sean Edwards. Sean is also the co-founder of the African American Film Critics Society. Welcome back, Sean. Nice to talk to you.
Hey, thanks a lot. It's always a pleasure.
Now, you gave us a list of your top choices. I'm going to build up anticipation and start in reverse order. What is number four on your list?
Well, one of my all-time favorite political movies is a movie that was released in 1998 called Bullworth. I thought it was very relevant because the main character is a guy who's actually running for the president of the United States. And I think he does the one thing that every citizen wishes that every politician would do.
Which is?
Straight up tell the truth.
Now, of course, he's having a nervous breakdown in this movie. I should mention it stars Warren Beatty and the then relatively unknown Halle Berry. I'm going to play a short clip. Now, those who saw the film, I think this is one of those scenes that you will remember. Here it is.
The Democratic Party don't care about the African-American community.
Isn't that obvious? Hey, you got half of your kids out of work and the other half are in jail. Do you see any Democrat doing anything about it? So what are you going to do, vote Republican?
I mean, come on, you can have a billion-man march. If you don't put down that malt liquor and chicken wings and get behind somebody other than a running back who stabs his wife, you're never going to get rid of somebody like me.
Ouch.
Yes. Yes.
Why did you pick this one?
I like it because it's sort of a contemporary film. It was released in 1998, which is pre-9/11. So the landscape is sort of before the things that happened on, you know, September 11, 2001, which totally changed, you know, the tone of political movies being released by Hollywood.
Okay. Let's go to number three.
The classic Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, which was released in 1939. And I think a lot of people consider this movie great. And I do as well, because Mr. Smith is this everyday guy who goes to Washington with the hopes that he can change a corrupt governmental system. And I think a lot of the reason why the film is so endearing is because of, you know, Jimmy Stewart's great performance. I mean, let's not forget about that. I mean, I think a lot of people could see themselves as Jimmy Stewart because that performance was just so overwhelmingly fantastic. But I think people, even though they may be a little more cynical today, I think in the back of their minds, they still think that as an American, as a participant in our political system, that we still have the power, if we want, to go in and make a change, whether we're running for, you know, student council president, for the city council, for the Senate, or for the presidency. I think we all have the hopes that people will listen to us and we have the power to create change.
Now, the next film is on your list is one that I'm just not that familiar with. It's called V for Vendetta. Tell me about it.
Number one, I like it just because, I mean, I think it's one of the best movies made in the past 10 years. It's based off of a graphic novel, and it deals with the issue that a lot of people have been struggling with recently, and that's the issue of terrorism. In fact, Hollywood's released several movies that have been, you know, based on terrorism. This is one of the few movies based on terrorism that was actually pretty successful, and it deals with the whole idea of taking a symbol and crushing that symbol to create change.
As I understand it, the character V is played by Hugo Weaving. And then in this clip that we're going to play, he's talking to Natalie Portman, who plays a character called Evie. Let's listen.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
And you're going to make that happen by blowing up a building?
The building is a symbol, as is the act of destroying it. Symbols are given power by people. Alone, a symbol is meaningless. But with enough people, blowing up a building can change the world.
Now, you were saying that this is one of the few films post 9/11 that addressed some of the issues raised by 9/11 that was actually successful. Why do you think that is?
I think one of the reasons this movie was successful compared to some of the others, because I think the other movies Hollywood has released have been too realistic, too serious. This was also better than a lot of the movies that Hollywood has released about terrorism, was another reason I give it credit for being successful. It's a well-made movie that's sort of fictional, that really doesn't directly deal with the themes of 9/11, but sort of addresses them symbolically. A lot of the other movies sort of like tackle 9/11 head on, and I don't think the general public's ready to actually deal with those issues just yet.
And finally, your number one. What's your number one?
Number one by a wide margin, and it's All the President's Men, released in 1976, which stars Robert Redford, Dustin Hoffman, and Jason Robards, who actually won an Academy Award for his performance in this movie, that deals with two reporters who work for the Washington Post, and they actually are working on a story that involves the Watergate incident that began in like the early 70s and actually ended up forcing President Richard Nixon to resign.
And for the little newbies among us, this is actually not fiction. I mean, for people, some people don't know this.
This is not totally fiction.
There may be some of the characters in the film or might be composite characters of people in real life, but the reality is Robert Redford plays Bob Woodward, Jason Robards plays Ben Bradley, and, you know, there's a Carl Bernstein character. Let me play a short clip, and you can tell us what it is that you liked about the film and why it's your top pick.
Did Deep Throat say that people's lives are in danger?
Yes.
What else did he say?
He said everyone is involved.
You know the results of the latest Gallup poll? Half the country never even heard of the word Watergate. Nobody gives a.
And of course, I think that this is on a lot of reporters' list of top picks of all time, because it harkens back to a more innocent time when people actually liked reporters or thought they did a good job. But why is this your top pick?
It's my top pick because it took a complicated subject matter in dealing with the Watergate incident, and they very cleverly and very realistically were able to turn it into a 2-hour movie, which is very difficult to do. I have to be honest, I am a bit biased because I got my start working at a newspaper. So I used to be a journalist, a print journalist as well. So the realism of the newsroom, the realism of the editors and the reporters and the process that it takes to uncover facts, to develop sources, to tap into a story and dig into all the information you need to turn this into a credible news story that changes the course of a country and totally redirects history, which is so fascinating in this movie. And most of all, the movie totally holds up over time. It's just a great work of film.
Now, I know that people are going to want to argue with you. No Manchurian Candidate, no Dave, no W.
The four films that we talked about represent different genres. So, you know, I wanted to get a satire. I wanted to get a movie that dealt with terrorism. I wanted to give an example of a movie pre-9/11, post-9/11. And then we had to talk about one of the older classics, which is represented by Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, because there are a lot of great political films. And, you know, don't let this list sway you. There are a lot of good movies. This is a starting point.
All right. Sean Edwards is a film critic for Fox Television in Kansas City, Missouri. He joined us from member station KCUR in Kansas City. What about you? Agree with Sean's top picks, or is he all wet? You can let us know. You can call our comment line at 202-842-3522, or you can contact us at the Tell Me More page at npr.org and blog it out. Sean, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Welcome to a night of total terror.
Blackula, the Black Avenger.
Okay, sound effects have come a long way. We're talking about Blackula, Night of the Living Dead, Candyman, Bones. Black people in horror movies go way back. No, black folks are not always the first to die, thank you very much. For more on the world of black horror movies, we have with us Stephanie Dunn, an assistant professor of English at Morehouse College, and actor Tony Todd, who played the legendary horror icon, the Candyman. Happy Halloween, guys.
Happy Halloween, Farai. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good afternoon, everybody. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Tony.
So, some people love them, some people hate them. I happen to love them. The crazed killers, scantily clad co-eds, people dripping ooze, any of that. Maybe it could also be the fact that horror movies break down social conventions, and horror films and black films do have a certain overlap zone. So, Stephanie, you've done some research on specifically blaxploitation films and cult cinema that overlaps the horror zone. What have you found out?
Well, for one thing, AIP, that's American International Pictures, put out a lot of the classic blaxploitation films. That's where we have Jack Hill's Coffee and Foxy Brown. But at first, they were doing a lot of horror films. For example, 1974 Vampira with Teresa Graves, who is later Get Christy Love. Mm-hmm. And they also put out Blackula in 1972. And so there are elements that we see in the blaxploitation films that borrowed nicely, if you will, or that parallel what we see in the horror films that American International Pictures invested in the early 1970s.
Tony, Candyman is not of the same genre. It's this film that unfolds in a certain very stratified, very specific, divided world of race and class. How would you describe what kind of a film Candyman is?
Well, I think it's a direct byproduct of urban mythology. The director, Bernard Rose, approached me because he had seen some work I had done in a project I did in Africa called The Last Elephant with James Earl Jones. And he says, you know, he played a Maasai warrior, and that's the kind of concept I have. And I wasn't really familiar with Clive Barker's work, but I read The Forbidden. Bernard had an interesting take of transposing it to Chicago. We went to do some research and things worked out. And before I knew it, we had Philip Glass along and, you know, Virginia Madsen, Vanessa Williams, Casey Lemons, and we had a great cast and a great time in the citizens of Chicago. So to this day, 16 years later, not a minute goes by where somebody that doesn't acknowledge that moment of cinema. And I think it was a triumph, you know, in some social, we talked about conventions breaking down. This guy actually survived for 99% of the movie. You know?
Yeah. And it was an anti-hero.
It was a love story originally intended. You know, the studio got a little nervous at the last minute and cut some key scenes. But what's remains is still that attraction that's between the two characters and what one will do for the other in terms of undying love and so forth.
Well, we have a little bit of the original Night of the Living Dead and also of Candyman. I'm
the late,
hoping that
great
we,
Dwayne Jones.
I'm hoping we can take a listen to Candyman.
We have a bargain.
But I'm afraid.
Do you fear the pain or what is beyond?
Both.
The pain, I can assure you, will be exquisite.
So tell me about the love story aspect of Candyman.
Well, we had, when Bernard gave me the script, we did some Renaissance body work, Virginia and I. We had 6 months to do horseback riding and fencing, all the elegant Phantom of the Opera type thing. And if you know the backstory of Candyman, he was a painter in turn of the century, and he fell in love with, quote-unquote, the wrong person, and then he was lynched and castrated and had his arm cut off. So it's the ghoul of the spirit of this person who was an artist, whose father was a shoe cobbler, who just wanted to be in love, that, you know, is forced to follow this person through eternity. So,
Stephanie, that's, you know, it's very interesting because you've got a lot of history and rebellion tied up in that narrative. Are horror movies generally about rebellion, or are they more about just, you know, kind of making the adrenal gland and you know, all your adrenaline pump?
I think that it's a combination. They're definitely about the former. But Stephen King wrote this great essay that is called something like Why We Crave Horror, you know, Films. And he suggests that this feeds something in us. We get some distance, right, from the horror because we're not in it, so to speak, right? But it feeds our sort of natural inclination to be thrilled by and excited by, you know, the horrific, if you will. So we have this sort of investment. We get to have this sort of spectator pleasure, right, in all of this, you know, surreal, sort of scary blood. And it's almost sort of like an outlet, I think. But there are also some subversive, I think, elements to horror films. There's the rebellion. That's why you have a lot of horror films sort of revolving around, right, aliens and, right, people who are, you know, the living dead sort of type of people. And we have this mix there.
Let me jump in and play a little bit from Night of the Living Dead. That was back from 1968 and one of the first horror films, big horror films, to have a black man as the protagonist. Here's the hero Ben and another survivor hiding in a house surrounded by flesh-eating zombies.
Help me! Please!
Don't you know what's going on out there? This is no Sunday school picnic.
Don't you understand? My brother is alone!
Your brother is dead.
No!
What about the racial elements of a scene like that?
Do you know what? What's interesting about that film is that it's the way it consciously does not really acknowledge race in the sense of Ben and his relationship with the other characters. So, for example, there's the white man, older white man, Mr. Cooper, who Ben is at odds with throughout the film. So all through this film, Ben gets to, you know, curse him out, tell him, you know, you can be the boss downstairs, I'll be the boss upstairs. And he basically gets to be in control in terms of determining the moves that the other survivors and he make. But it's at really, I think, at the end of the film that you get a little bit of a hint as to some of the possible racial implications because of what happens to Ben and why it happens to him, precisely how he's killed.
Tony, you do so many different types of acting in addition to doing stage work. You're also in 24, entering its seventh season. Yeah. And also you've got something...
which we had to go to Africa to shoot, by the way.
Ooh, I'm excited about that. Yeah. Also on BET with something called Night Tales. Tell us just quickly about that.
Well, Night Tales debuts tonight as a film I made with this black filmmaker in Sacramento called Dion Taylor. And it's a very interesting thing. BET picked it up and they're broadcasting it like four times tonight.
All right.
So Flavor Flav is the host.
Uh-oh. I'm scared right now.
I think they contained him. He was there.
If nothing else, that'll get me scared. Tony and Stephanie, happy Halloween again.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, Farai. Happy Halloween, Tony.
Thank you.
We've been speaking to actor Tony Todd, who played the legendary horror icon Candyman. He joined us from NPR West. And Stephanie Dunn, assistant professor of English at Morehouse College.
For more about these and other movies, visit our website, npr.org/movies.